You've tuned in to Check on Your Mates, a limited series podcast dedicated to men's mental health. How has the perception of well-being evolved for men over the years? How have veterans, athletes, physicians, and other leaders coped and inspired other men in their careers? Listen in as your host, Katie McSweeney, talks with them about their pivotal moments, the trials and the triumphs on Check on Your Mates. Here's Katie.
Clint, thanks so much for coming in today.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it. Yes, local to Dallas, so I'm so glad that it could work out. You grew up in Dallas, right?
No, I actually grew up in Amarillo.
Nice.
But yeah, I've been here for about 20 years.
Okay, awesome. What brought you to Dallas?
Honestly, just work. Like, yeah. I was doing some other things. So I, like, part of the story that we'll talk about when we're talking about mental health, I worked for my dad for a long time, which worked for his dad. And so I've come from a generation of entrepreneurs inside, you know, the service industry, plumbing, heating, air conditioning, all that.
Awesome. And how many kids do you have?
I have three now. So I waited a little while to have kids. So I'm old. I'm 48. So I have a 15-year-old is my oldest, 15-year-old boy hockey player, which is important part of my life in terms of, you know, grandfather raising my dad and my dad raising me and me now trying to impart some of that into my oldest, and then my 8-year-old boy also. And in the middle of all that, I have a daughter that will this month, and she reminds us regularly that it's this month she will turn 12. And she is a dancer and performer and, you know, all things girl. But they're fun. They're great.
Oh, that's great. So it's like you get a little bit of both.
I do. Yeah. It's interesting because of the way that I'm wired to navigate my daughter at some level, because I don't need to talk a lot. I mean, I can do this podcast and we can chat. I can also sit very still and very quiet and not have to talk to anybody and be perfectly content. She is not that way. So it's interesting navigating. I think that's God's way of going, hey, there's some things you need to learn. But at one point, my daughter sat me down. She was probably three. She's like, Dad, we need to talk. And she has not shut up since. So I'm learning how to deal with that sort of environment too, instead of just the intensity that I grew up with my father and grandfather. And I only had a brother. And, you know, sports and all the things that go into that. And it was, it's very different navigating a girl. Oh. And so it's fun. I like it.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I'm just now coming into the men's mental health space and learning a lot about men, you know?
Yeah. It's a scary place to be when you really learn. A scary place to be, but that, it's important, right? Because the things that I need to learn about my daughter, I need to convey to her too about who men are and convey to my son who women are, so that we can get around some of the things that happen in terms of men's mental health and not being able to communicate clearly and effectively. And I still don't do it great. Like, I'm not great at this. And so there's times where, you know, guys shut down and don't communicate anything about what's going on in their head. And I want my daughter to understand what that's like. And I want my daughter to understand that maybe sometimes you just need to grab his hand and hold him a little bit and know that that is comforting and will convey some peace and some relief and all of that, and convey to my son, like, be open with whatever girlfriend you're going to have and whatever wife you're going to have about what things are happening in you. And it's hard to do. Like, that's a hard thing to do.
Yeah. Just vulnerability for both ends, you know, just, we can all learn from each other, but that's just really hard. And especially when men from a young age are drilled, if you fall off a bike, you know, get right up, man up, and just having that sense of community is like something that
rub the dirt on it. Let's go. Like, suck it up. And I still have some level of that I'm like, it's a delicate balance as a parent, right? To try to navigate my 15-year-old now that's playing hockey and be tough, be competitive, be ready to be a warrior, be ready to be violent if it's required, but don't use it if you don't have to. And how do you navigate that? Like, as a parent, how do I navigate that sense of be at peace, but be prepared and be tough, but also be sensitive? And it's just a tough thing because you look at it and you go, okay, because I grew up, right? You get hurt, rub dirt on it, back out there, let's go. And I want that to exist, but I also want them to be able to hear me go, look, it's okay for us to navigate this stuff and figure out where we're at. And I would say I probably don't do it as well as I would like to, because I'm still really intense and I'm still really passionate about a lot of things. And it's hard for me to convey that clearly to my 15-year-old. Hopefully by the time I get to, you know, the 12-year-old and then to the 8-year-old, I've figured some things out and I'm even better at it because I'm maturing at the same time with them as I'm learning how this works. And I'm trying to, you know, put good men around them, so that he sees and hears and knows what things are about. And
right.
they watch us go in and serve other people because that's important, and realize that you can be sensitive and be caring and be helpful and not have to be just about yourself. And, but it's a unique environment because we're, I think all of us are wired. So I'm big in my faith, and I know, you've had David Vibor on, and he's also big in his faith.
Absolutely.
And I think the reality for that is, I think we're all wired to like not be known. Mm-hmm. We don't want to be known because the known part of us is not good, not holy, not pleasant, right? Like sans Jesus in my life, I'm not a really nice person. I'm intense and I'm probably mean and probably belligerent, but that dials it all back a little bit. And so it's hard to convey to somebody like my 15-year-old going, be able to be vulnerable and be known. Being around places like Adaptive Training Foundation and around guys that are working through that themselves at his age is good. Cause I didn't have that, right? Mm-hmm. When I was growing up, that didn't exist. Like you weren't going in and hugging guys and hey man, I love you. That wasn't something that was being said. So I never experienced that until I got older and around others and started realizing this is important and significant. So I think it's good, but it's different.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that kind of just goes into my next question. So since, you know, you've started your career, how would you say that men's mental health, like awareness around that, has changed?
Yeah. So, I mean, coming into being an entrepreneur and growing through things, there's a lot, it's a weird place to live.
Right.
As opposed to somebody that's employed with someone, I not only have my family to worry about, but I have 30 other families to worry about as well, and to ensure that they have money and food on the table and all of that. And so as an employer, I'm not known to be vulnerable to my employees if things aren't going the way I think they should, if it seems to be slow, if I'm anxious about work coming in or collecting on invoices or any of those things. I don't talk to them about that. I'll have conversations with my business partner, my wife, about some of that. And there are some people I can confide in and talk about where things are going. But our natural state is, hey man, how's business? Oh man, it's great. Everything's great. You know, I love it. We're busy. Things are going the way they should. Now you're starting to get a little bit of people going, it's a little bit slower than I like, but we're in a good spot and everything's great. So it's still not spectacular in the business space. And part of that is that competitive nature of individuals that are trying to be entrepreneurs and they don't want to be seen as not as successful as the person they're talking to or not doing as well as the person they're talking to. And so it's hard to get them to open up about it. Mm-hmm. Now I have a business aspirin podcast that I do, and I get to talk to some entrepreneurs about that. And I get them to open up sometimes about it and be honest about what are the problems and what are your struggles and how are you know, navigating this and diving through it. The mental health stuff still doesn't come up, but we do talk about the stresses. We do talk about, man, you lay awake at night and you don't sleep well around some of the things that are going on. And that's my story too. Like I'm going to be awake twice a night for probably an hour each, regardless. And it's just that environment of, okay, where are things? Like, what is going on? How do we navigate this? But there's not a lot of conversation about it in the entrepreneur space. And maybe we need to change that. Maybe this is going to help kind of open that up a little bit and have guys being willing to be vulnerable about, like I'm stressed because I tell guys at times, like I live in this space where it takes one little thing going wrong for you to lose everything. And one bad decision, one stupid comment, we have 30 trucks on the road and, you know, God forbid somebody does something stupid and we kill somebody with one of our vehicles. It's I live in that space where I'm like, man, this could all fall apart. Mm-hmm. And that creates some anxiety, but not an overwhelming anxiety for me. Like I'm able to have peace about it and kind of go, okay, let's do things. And we've got a great team and we seem to do things right. But, there's some things that need to change inside the realm of entrepreneurs to be able to have those conversations for sure.
Yeah. Have you been affected at all, like in your personal life? I've just noticed a trend by around age 30. A guy knows at least one buddy or has some sort of connection, whether it's a buddy's brother, cousin, that they've lost to suicide.
Yeah. So like when I was a senior in high school, we lost one to suicide.
Wow.
And so it was an individual, and this is a crappy story, truly, but he thought he was going to be valedictorian. They did grades. Turns out he was not going to be valedictorian. A girl was going to be beating him, Asian guy. And culturally for him, it was important that he didn't get beat by her. Mm-hmm. And so he took his life, hung himself in a closet as a 17 or 18 year old kid. I don't know exactly how old he was when this happened. And because he was not going to be valedictorian, turns out he actually was. The scoring was wrong when they posted it originally, and he would have been. We lost him as a result, which is a weird, it was a weird dynamic, right?
Yeah.
At that time, there was not a lot of, you know, apparently now it's the lead, you know, like 10 to 24, it's like a significant cause or a significant portion of the deaths is suicide for ages 10 to 24.
Yeah.
I don't think it was at that time. At least we weren't hearing about it.
Right.
But social media wasn't obviously a thing then and as strong then. So, but yeah, I experienced that. And then, a guy that we worked with, working with my dad, one of the guys that was a subcontractor for us that did some work on some other things and we did some stuff for, took his life. And so I've experienced it a couple of times, and it's an interesting thing to go through. Right?
Yeah.
And I know you've been through it, right?
Yeah, so absolutely.
My story's not, I've not been as close to someone who has as you have been.
Right.
And so I can't relate that same way, but it still sucked, right?
Yeah.
And there've been others, you know, as I've gotten older, there have been more.
Yeah.
Never a female.
Yeah, exactly. It's never female. I mean, here and there, but just in my personal life, my sister lost 5 guy friends she knew personally. And throughout her time in high school, she was older than me, 6 guys took their life. And a lot of it was the same way. And it's become the norm for guys to be like, I've lost so many buddies, at least the men that I've spoken to. And it actually increases with age for men.
Mm-hmm. And part of my involvement with Adaptive Training Foundation is that there's been a few, right?
Right.
And even church staff where it's occurred and the stress of all those. And I work a lot. So I own a fire and water restoration company. And so having a good relationship with the firefighters is important and good. And first responders are like, there's a lot of demons for those guys too, because of what they see on a regular basis and have to navigate. And a lot of stress from that perspective that needs to be navigated.
No, absolutely. Yeah. First responders, EMS, veterans, it's just heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what Adaptive Training Foundation is doing is incredible.
Yeah, for sure. Right. Because that really, the whole goal there is to work on the mental side of it and hopefully navigate some of the ways to not deal with those thoughts, those demons.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I can't even imagine what they see. And
it's interesting too, from that perspective, having to like talking to my kids about this, right? And being able to go, okay, well, what happened? Well, like the things that they've seen and the things that they've experienced create some mentally tough things to navigate.
Right.
And sometimes it's overwhelming, right? And there's been some that, like, it's always going to be difficult to be whether it was accidental or not. And some of it's like overdose, and it's very likely that it was just trying to numb the pain and not trying to end the life. But it sucks either way, right?
Yeah.
And then to try to explain to your 8-year-old what happened to, I mean, in this case, Chris Biggs, like, you know, he knows about the buddy of ours that lost his life and it was a suicide, and try to make that make sense.
Right.
Is hard, right?
Like, yeah. How did you frame that to a young child?
So we're pretty transparent with them about, because they're around ATF, and ATF's a pretty gritty place. So when they're there, they, you know, at 3 years old, he could talk about a prosthetic, right?
Yeah.
So they've seen the kind of the tragic side of what can potentially happen. And so we're just very open with them about, look, here's what's going on. Mm-hmm. And you're aware that he was in the military, and you're aware that, you know, there are some things that he did that he was told to do and required to do that are hard, right? Like, and he had to kill some people, and, and that's tough regardless if that's what you needed to do and that was the right thing to do. It's still going to weigh on you. And maybe your buddy got blown up and you watched your friend die right beside you. And that's hard. You know, how would you feel if your friend died? And, it's just really hard on these guys. And so as a result, they try to figure out ways to heal and get better. And sometimes it's difficult. And a lot of it's depending on how they're wired and what hopes they have in other places. What hopes do they have in their faith? Or is it just, this is it, and when it's over, it's over? Makes a big difference in terms of how you respond. Mm-hmm. And we just talk to them that way, right?
Yeah.
And go to the memorial service and let them sit in the memorial service and be a part of what's happening.
Yeah.
Because that's important to learn. And hopefully in learning and seeing that mm-hmm. at an early age helps you navigate, okay, how do I make sure I'm okay
right.
in this environment?
Yeah.
Is that the right decision? I don't know, Katie. But that's the way we handled it.
No, I think that sounds really healthy. I mean, just being transparent with him, and you know, you can't shield them from the world forever. And
right.
especially with men, it's just, I feel like that's why it just all comes crashing down, because men wear the world on their shoulders, just expectations of society, like provide, work, just every expectation a man has. It's like, of course, being a human is hard in general, but people have all these resources for women, and people say how hard it is to be a woman, but it's hard being a man too. And people don't seem to recognize that. And men are just villainized in the media nowadays.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough to be a guy.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say it's tougher being a guy than it mm-hmm. is to be a woman, because I don't have that perspective.
Right.
Right. But I will say my wife has less anxiety about making sure the business runs
right.
Than I do. But she has her own set of worries and struggles that she has to navigate. Mm-hmm. I mean, I almost died in 21 from COVID.
Gosh.
So I spent 6 weeks in ICU wow. and lost 50 pounds and couldn't stand up and was on oxygen for a long time. And it was hard on her. Like wow. she wound up in the hospital because of anxiety associated with that. Cause she just didn't know what was going to happen with me. And it was only for, I mean, she was only there for a day, and they figured out what was going on and were able yeah. to give her some medication to kind of solve it. But, her own set of anxiety around life. And so it's a lot of all of this is circumstantial, mm-hmm. right? It's like depending on what's going on in your world at that time determines how you respond.
Right.
And so much of it is like, you have to have tools, which is part of what ATF does, to be able to navigate some of that and be able to use those tools to recognize when something's coming on. And maybe you can do some breath work and kind of calm yourself down and relax out of it. And maybe you can't, but if you don't have the tools and don't learn some of the tools early, you're kind of stuck, right? Is medication the right thing? Maybe it depends. Mm-hmm. Depends on what's going on. Do you always want to stay medicated? I would say probably not, but learn ways to navigate around it. And so, you know, it's interesting to have to, especially when, you know, I'm in ICU. I'm at that point, I have a BiPAP mask on, which is like this massive thing that's forcing air into me. I was never intubated, fortunately, but I find out, you know, that my wife's in the hospital, and I'm like, oh my God. And I couldn't do anything about it. And so I was stuck in a hospital bed.
Wow.
Trying to get a hold of family people. So in Dallas, we don't have family, you know, actual blood relative family mm-hmm. here. But we've got family that I was able to get a hold of. I got a hold of her sister, who was actually in Lubbock, and I was able to get a hold of some of the friends and be like, okay, what's going on? And I need somebody to find this out and figure it out. And they had already known, like they were already aware, and were able to navigate some of that and provide some calmness to me. But as a guy, when you, like, you can't do anything about it. Like, I'm stuck.
Yeah.
And so that was an interesting endeavor to wow. not be able to do anything for my wife when I'm sick and trying to die in a hospital and mm-hmm. she's having an anxiety attack because of me. Right. And I didn't know what it was at the time. Right. I just knew she was in the hospital. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh my gosh. And then I've got three kids. What's happening with them? Where are mm-hmm. they? What's going to happen here?
Wow. Unique. Yeah. I can't even imagine. Unique. I just got chills yeah. thinking about that. Yeah. But tell me a little bit more about that. What was that like for you? Just being in the hospital and.
Yeah. So it was, you know, COVID pneumonia. Yeah. I think part of what I do as a restoration guy, there's always nasty environments and, you know, mold and some of that stuff. And at some point somewhere, I apparently developed a fungal infection in my lung too, because the pneumonia was so bad that it was just able to amplify. So I was not in good shape. Like literally I could get up, At one point I was getting up out of my bed and walking to the window, which is about where you are, and coming back and sitting down. And that was my physical therapy for the day because I couldn't do more than that. My body's wasting away. I have some photos where literally like I'm in a less fit. I'm 240 now. I was about 190 pounds at that point, which is very frail on my body. Looked rough. Obviously looked sick. And so it was a tough time for me while I'm in the hospital. This is, you know, August of 21. It was a pretty big height of COVID with a lot of people dying and massive push for vaccinations and all of that. And, when I first got it, I thought I was going to be fine because I was healthy. I was working out at ATF all the time. I was in great shape. And so I just thought I'd, you know, statistically you'll just, you know, be okay. It'd be like a little cold and you'd be fine. You move on. And that's not what happened. I got sick very quickly, with the pneumonia and then the fungal infection. And so, I'm wasting away in the hospital and I'm personally aware of five people that passed away in the hospital from COVID while I was in the hospital. And that just has a different weight to it. Mm-hmm. Right. I didn't think I was going to make it out of the hospital. I didn't get a chance to see my family. They couldn't come see you. My kids, my wife eventually was able to come see me the last little bit because they moved me to IMCU. It's a step down unit and they can actually have people there, but my kids were never old enough to be able to come see me. And so you don't get to see them. You're trying to communicate with them with a mask. Like I'm literally having to pull this mask off my face to try to talk to them on the phone on FaceTime, but then I can't breathe because I'm not producing oxygen. So I have to put that back on. And it's, the communication was, hey, how you doing? Right? Like all I could get out and, which is anxiety prone for them, right? It's like, that's not good. And they're not sure what's going to happen and they're anxious and worried. And I don't know if I'm going to make it out. Now, I was never in a spot where I was so out of breath that I'm like, oh my God, like this is, I'm right now is when I'm going to die. Mm-hmm. But the reality of not knowing is crazy. Now I still function, you know, it was tough. It was a hard time. It was good. But now I still function with about 70% lung function right now, but I'm capable of doing a lot of things. I can't, you know, like I went to Leadville with David to help support him when he was doing the Leadville run. And that's at 10,000 feet. And I was okay. I wasn't spectacular there because elevation's hard, but I did fine. I was able to do it and no problems. I'm not going to be able to go run with him. Like I couldn't go run the 50 miles in powder or in the Grand Canyon like that. But, I'm good now. Right. So it was hard journey. A lot of introspection because you're like, okay, this could be it. Like, are things set and things ready to go? There's some beautiful things that came out of that. Like just the support from my family, the love my wife showed and how she took care of me. It was literally, I couldn't even shower by myself. When I got home, like I had to have oxygen on to shower and like had to have a shower chair. So my son built a shower chair so I could have a shower chair and sit there and let him bathe me. So it was good because it kind of opened up some of the relationship, right? And the support in my, which was, I guess, 13-year-old at the time, was stepping up to help his mom. And he was a whole lot nicer to his sister at that time. And things were good. And business was running great. And the guys that we had on the team were exceptional. And it helped me realize that, you know, there's a whole lot more out there on our team and what they're doing. One of the things like just popped in my head when I was sitting there was the reality is I am not a guy that likes to ask for help. I'm one of those statistics. It's like, guys don't talk, guys don't open up. I'm wired to always want to do everything on my own. Like I don't want to communicate and be like, hey, I need help with this. I couldn't do anything for myself. Okay. I was literally like, I had gotten to the point where yes, once I'd gotten home and I'm on more oxygen than what they want to send you home with, because they don't want you to be on that much oxygen when you're out in the world. I would get out of my bed. I could walk to the living room and sit down in the chair and watch TV. And I could go to the bathroom. Wow. And that was it. Like I couldn't do anything else. That like I couldn't get up and go to the kitchen and even make myself a sandwich because I didn't have enough strength to do that. And it took a while to get that. And everybody's waiting on me and everybody's helping me. And like, that's a hard thing when you're accustomed to, I had started a couple of businesses. I was, you know, in great shape. I was doing all this stuff. I was, you know, it's when you can't, it's very different and it creates some stress there.
Right.
And it's, that's provided some perspective to me on a lot of what happens at the Athletes with Adaptive Training Foundation mm-hmm. is like, you know, very different than you used to be.
Yeah.
And you've got to get back to, okay, what's the new normal? What are you capable of? How hard are you willing to push? What are you willing to do to get back to where you needed to be? And then sometimes you have to just be okay with you're not who you were and ask for help.
Yeah.
And so there's been some of that, which has been great and weird all at the same time, right? Because mm-hmm. it's like, I don't want to do that. But yeah. it's valuable. Like, so it's, do I wish this hadn't happened? Yeah. I wish I'd never gotten COVID and I wish I was full functioning on my lungs and I could oxygenate well and be, you know, back to 100%. But it's not the reality right now. And so we work with what we have.
Yeah. I feel like when people go through a near-death experience or they lose someone close to them, it really shapes the way that they see the world. So other than a takeaway for you was asking for help, did you have any further takeaways from that experience?
Oh, there's a lot, right?
Yeah.
Being able to relate a little differently with others. Mm-hmm. Because like, for instance, if somebody's missing a leg, it's right. a new hard thing to navigate.
Yeah.
And there was no perspective for what's it like to be physically impaired in any capacity.
Right.
I was 100% capable of whatever I wanted to do. I could go do it. And now I'm limited. Now it's different. Like there's nothing visible. Mm-hmm. You can't see it. But it's not only just the oxygen. It's when you're low on oxygen, then not only are your lungs low on oxygen, but so is mm-hmm. your heart. And so are your kidneys. And so is your brain. And so you're hypoxic, which creates this environment where if I go too hard, my brain's not functioning correctly. So now mm-hmm. I'm not fully cognizant of everything that's happening. And so it's learning, like takeaways are, okay, dial it back a little bit. Like, don't mm-hmm. be stupid. Be smarter about where things are. Be smarter about how you push yourself and do it intelligently and do it correctly. So there's a lot of takeaways, right?
Yeah.
Like, be patient with others mm-hmm. that are having some kind of impairment. Maybe you can see it, maybe you can't.
Right.
Trust people to help you, like, and ask for help and trust them when they help you. Mm-hmm. And just be willing to be vulnerable is good, right?
Absolutely.
You don't have to be Superman all the time.
No, that's really well said. And yeah, that goes into men's mental health too. And just really like, if others are open about what they're going through and they're able to find a mentor, a mentee, or just a shoulder to lean on, then really I feel like the rates would be lowered as a result if there was more support. Just and like also like it goes for partners too of men, because divorced men, for example, like they have higher rates. And just sure. collectively as society, like as a stranger, a partner, brother, sister, how we raise men, just there's a lot we can do just by being more vulnerable with each other and just really checking in on our mates. So
yeah,
no, that's well said.
And that's the thing, right? Have mates,
yeah.
Have a tribe that you can lean on and rely on and dig into.
Yeah.
And it doesn't always have to be conversations about your mental health,
right?
But if you're around, if you have a group of people that you're close enough to, that you're around regularly, they're going to pick it up. Mm-hmm. They're going to go, wait, hey man, you're okay.
Yeah.
Right. And then if they ask, be willing to be truthful about it. So yeah, no, I'm fine. Right.
Yeah.
Like if they're asking, they know something's not right. So get you a tribe of people that's willing to be a part of your life that you can lean on and you can rely on. I think that's significant.
Absolutely.
It's hard. It's hard to do because again, like I said, nobody wants to really be known. We shy away from that mm-hmm. because that's a scary thing for people to know really who I am and all the things about me and how dark it is really inside there. That you don't want to share that. So I mean, you've got to be willing to be in a place where you at least have people that can ask because they know the real you well enough to know something's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's true.
No, that's really well said. And how many lieutenants would you say that you have in your posse? Like people you can really run to with open arms that know the true you?
Yeah, there's a few. And it's interesting because in life right now with the three kids, we're navigating – you know, a 15-year-old who plays travel hockey, an 11, well, almost 12-year-old that is, doing volleyball and doing a lot of competitive dance stuff. And then an 8-year-old that's playing baseball. And there's a lot of you know, trying to navigate getting them to the right places. And you know, the 15-year-old can't drive yet, which would have been really helpful. But it puts you on a spot where life changes and shifts and moves based on where you're going and how busy you are and what's happening. But there are some guys that, you know, I can communicate with regularly. There's guys from ATF that kind of know who I am. There's guys from church that I have communication with. So the reality of individuals that I would really lean on and trust and be like, hey, man, I need some help on something. There's five. There's probably 15 or so that I could communicate with that I could talk to a little bit and lean on certain circumstances. There's probably a total of five that I would dig in with and communicate with.
That's awesome.
Really about what's going on.
Did you meet them like through church or like what advice do you have for men who are kind of looking for that posse, that core group that they can lean towards?
Yeah.
Like on where to find that.
It depends on where you're at and what you're doing. Right.
Yeah.
But for me, mm-hmm. The most important ones are men of faith that I know yeah. I can rely on. And absolutely. So they're going to come from church or some yeah. other setting where I know that faith is important to them. Mm-hmm. But again, it's being present. It's right. being around them that creates those relationships. So you've got to find, like, you can't be alone by yourself trying to figure out how to do this stuff. Mm-hmm. So you've got to be a part of something that's going on in the world that allows you to find the individuals that you can become a part of a tribe with.
Yeah.
And so be active outside, recognize that you need it. Mm-hmm. Even well before you think you need it, you need to recognize that you need it and you need a tribe and you need friends and we all need somebody. Like it yeah. sucks to just kind of be like on your own.
Right.
Even though I'm relatively introverted in terms of social style. Like I'm, mm-hmm. again, I told you early, I'm content to just be at home on the couch, not talking to anybody. Just be, I'm going to sit there and somebody can be right here and we don't have to chat at all. Right. But you've got to be intentional about
yeah.
A community and being present and doing things. And that could be wherever you're at. It could yeah. be my 8-year-old's baseball team's families, right? And communicating mm-hmm. with them if those relationships build. It could be, we have pretty good relationships with the hockey families. And there's yeah. some of those guys that I could lean on if I needed to. But you've got to find them where you're at because it's hard to get them outside of where you're at, like build a relationship where you're at.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great advice. And describe to me an unforgettable experience.
Oh, wow. Like there's a lot of those. A good one, a fun one.
Yes.
Or like, cause unforgettable in the hospital is definitely unforgettable, yes. but I don't want to remember that one much. There's a lot, right? Like I've been married for almost 25 years now and the wedding was great and that was fun. We've had some really good trips together. But in terms of an experience that's just memorable that, you know, weighs in heavy. You know, I would say there's been one of the things that was like really kind of touching is it's really not that big of a deal too, right? Mm-hmm. But it's in terms of mental health and support and tribe, right? Was after I got out of the hospital and I went to Adaptive Training Foundation there was a class going on or an event going on. Like all that's a little blurry for me in terms of exactly what was happening, but there were a bunch of people in the gym and I was able to show up at the gym and got in and just sat there. But there was a huge amount of support and love around just my presence being mm-hmm. back there. Right. And it's because that's my tribe now. Mm-hmm. And so, from the perspective of what you're talking about, like that's an unforgettable experience. The love that was shown and the excitement about the fact mm-hmm. that I just walked in the door was pretty great. Oh. Right. So to have those and, to be able to hug my kids when I got home, yeah. Out of the hospital was spectacular. They made fun of me because, you know, for 6 weeks I couldn't get a haircut or shave. And so, Charlton Heston in the Moses movie.
Oh yeah.
They made fun of me. They were like, that's you. It looks like you. So, but those are all fun times. Yeah. Right. And it was great. And so I'm going to remember those things and they were great.
Like, just soaking in all that joy after everything you went through. I mean,
just the fact that you're home, right.
Yeah.
When you didn't think you were going to make it was great. So that's definitely a memorable experience.
Well, that's sure. incredible too. And it's just like to people that have passed, like when you show up at their funeral and if they died by suicide, it's like, you just wish that they could see like all the love that mm-hmm. people had for them. Like mm-hmm. how many people showed up, which.
Mm-hmm. And the reality of trying to solve a temporary pain
yeah.
right, with a permanent solution exactly. is tough because there's so many people that if they just knew that something was going on would love to support you and try to help you and provide whatever it is that you needed to be able to have that confidence of, hey, look, it's okay. Let's not do this. Let's take a break. Let's figure out what we need. Absolutely. Cause you're right. Like everyone that I've been to, it's like, God, man, there's a lot of support.
Yeah.
That could have been available. It was right there ready.
Yeah. It's the people would rather hear about your problems than hear about them at your funeral.
Mm-hmm.
It's a quote that I saw. And I just think that that's something people need to come to mind and just being open about that.
Yeah. That's a great statement though. Right. Yeah. Because the truth is they're going to hear about your problems.
Yeah.
And you're hear about them when you're dead. So let's talk about them now instead of then. That's great.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's great. Like, cause that's true.
Yeah. While there's solutions. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Describe to me a risk that was hard for you to make, but you're glad that you took.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So, like truthfully just starting Mr. Restore, which is my restoration business. It was like in 2008, basically Brock was born in March of 2008. In 2008, the economy just like dumped, right? It was a terrible economy and the world was imploding and nobody was ever going to survive and that sort of thing. Not quite like what the pandemic was, but it was certainly a, oh my gosh, moment. I basically wound up, like there were some other things that happened, but I basically wound up needing to have a job and trying to navigate what I needed to do. So it was like, okay, let's figure some things out. I lost my tail on a bunch of real estate. I had been flipping houses and the market went so bad that I was in a lot of trouble financially. And I was to the point where I had one house that I could potentially sell that I was hoping was going to sell. And I had $100. $100 is all I had left. And so I have all these expenses and a brand new kid. And so I needed to do something. And I understood the restoration space because I'd been around it before. And I knew I needed to see what could happen. And you know, this is going to sound terrible, but thank God there was a hurricane that hit Galveston in 2008. And I was able to go down there and do what I knew how to do and make some money. But that was, you know, sketchy, right? Like I've got $100 left.
Wow.
And it's like, okay, I got to get in there and do this and take some chances and see what happens. And it worked out, right? It turned out to be a good thing. Obviously things could have still gone better. And maybe I could have made other decisions and been a better spot for something else, but it's worked out good. And it's that has put me on the trajectory that allowed me to be a part of where I mean, it even led me to this podcast today, right?
Yeah.
Because without it, I wouldn't know David.
That's true.
If I was doing something different. So I don't discount those types of things and go, that could all have been orchestrated clearly by God to move me to the right place for certain moments. And so I try to, you know, recognize those and go, hey, this is great. But that was definitely, it may not be as risky because I was already in trouble, right? I was in a bind anyway.
Yeah.
But it was one of those things. It's like, we got to do it. And so we just jumped on it and we went at it and it worked out and put us here.
That's incredible. No, God provides. And just, it sounds like the common denominator that you've had this whole time throughout everything you've been through is just having your faith as your rock.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's the only thing that carries you through, right?
Really?
Yeah. When you're seemingly dying in a hospital. Like the reality is if you look at what's happened, you don't have people coming to you in a hospital to visit you and you don't have any other kind of hope or anything else to lean on. Like that's a hard place to be. So I get it why it was easy for a lot of people to give up in the hospital and die because it's like, wow. But yeah, faith is significant in terms of my trajectory and what's put me there. And it's what kept me alive through that. Right.
Absolutely.
And people go, well, are you sure? I'm like, well, part of it was, I had 50 pounds that I could lose because I was big enough that I could carry that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because God put me through that place to give me those 50 pounds. Right. So it's unique. It's just how you navigate the conversation, but absolutely. That's a significant part of it.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Cause they say we have a God size hole in our heart. Like, so a person can, like God can fill in the absence of a person, but no one can fill in the absence of God. That's another quote I said.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I do respect all faiths, but here in Chuck and the Mates, it is influenced a little bit with Christianity. So just wanted to clarify that I respect all faiths.
Sure. Yeah. Like I'm not mad at anybody. Yeah. This is my faith. This is
exactly
where I'm at,
same.
Right?
I'm just,
And the reality for that is if I believe this is true and I don't share it with somebody, then that's a jerk, right? Like you're a jerk. If you think this is real and you don't tell somebody about it, then why would you not tell somebody about
it?
Right?
True.
So, and I think the same way for them, you know, anybody has another faith, another belief should be doing the same thing.
No, absolutely. So, I'm just living out that truth.
Yeah.
No, that's amazing. Yeah. Well, I know you were telling me a little bit about this earlier, just having a son and daughter. Obviously, men and women communicate completely differently. And how would you say that has changed just like throughout social media and just awareness around mental health?
Like the difference in how people communicate?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's interesting because, again, they've grown up where that's kind of the only thing that exists, right? And phones regularly and YouTube videos and access to information at an unbelievable level. And so it'll be interesting to see the full difference in how they communicate mm-hmm. as they grow. And I don't fully know yet, Katie. Like I'm trying to navigate as this changes, which I'm assuming is the same thing my parents went through, right? As they mature and as they grow and as the society around mm-hmm. us changes and becomes a different version, seemingly right now, it's just a weird world that we live in.
Right.
And so, you know, we try to make sure we're teaching them the importance of one, their faith, right? Like my kids mm-hmm. go to a faith-based school. And so it's a unique type of environment because they only go to school 2 days a week. So they're able to go to Adapt Dream Foundation and help in classes and do other things. And so we're trying to put them in a position where they recognize that they are responsible for themselves. It's tough. My son doesn't naturally, and he's pretty introverted, right? He doesn't want to communicate a whole lot. He would have a heart attack right here sitting in front of this microphone trying to have a conversation with you because there's cameras on and somebody's recording the sound. And maybe that changes. Like he communicates well. Like I've had individuals, parents of other people go, "Thank you for raising a man," mm-hmm. because he'll look them in the eye and shake their hand and, you know, and have a conversation with them. But he's not insanely comfortable in all of that. Like myself either, right? Like mm-hmm. if you take David Vibora and I into a room, I'm content to just kind of hang out and I'll meet people and I'll have some conversations where David's going to know everybody in the room before the night's over and mm-hmm. had a conversation with them. And I'm going to be there and I would support and whatever anybody needed, I'm there for it. But, my son is not really all that into building relationships and mm-hmm. having that communication, which is something I'm going to have to watch and navigate, right? Because he's going to need that. And right now the conversation is around, you know, he wants to go play hockey and then go into the military as a special forces operator. Mm-hmm. And so as a parent, that's terrifying. As a dude, that's super cool, right? Like, oh yeah. As a parent, it's like, okay. And then knowing what I know now about mental health and what that leads to now, mm-hmm. he's seen some of the tragic part of it, right? Because he's been around ETF. He knows what can happen and he still wants to choose to do that. That's great. But he doesn't have, like he has good friends, but mm-hmm. very few. Cause he's not great at building relationships. Mm. Great kid, right? Super pleasant, really polite, good kid, super athletic, but he's not wired to go build relationships. And I need to navigate that. And mm-hmm. like the beautiful thing about like just doing this with you makes me go, okay, there are things I need to think about a little bit better. Because we're having this conversation.
Right.
My daughter, however, she'll communicate with everybody. Like she wants to be friends mm-hmm. with all the people and she wants to tell everybody a story and she wants to do all these things. She's been that way forever. Like at one point, like the funny story about my daughter is, she was probably, maybe she was five. Let's just say she was five. And part of my wife's family was in town for Thanksgiving or a Christmas dinner or whatever. And so she took them upstairs and she's telling Chris. Now, Chris is an attorney. They went to Duke, went to Duke Law, became an attorney. He's one of the attorneys for the NFLPA right now. So sharp guy, right?
Yeah.
And she takes him upstairs as a five-year-old, this attorney, and starts having this conversation. And she's telling this whole story about what her teacher is telling her about what she needs to do in music and how she needs to be able to work on these things so that she can get better at her music lessons and, you know, maybe make these things and go this direction. It's all made up. She made the entire story up and he was in on the whole thing. He thought it was like real. He's like, I didn't know she was doing this. I'm like, she's not. Like she just made the story up on the spot. So she's great at communicating and great mm-hmm. at storytelling and great at building relationships. So two very different individuals in my life. And then the third one is, I mean, he's great, right? He loves to communicate. He's very tenderhearted. Like he wants to hug everybody before he leaves, to make sure everybody, you know, says, thank you, Dad, for buying the food. Mm-hmm. Just so very pleasant, very tenderhearted kid. And it's like, I'm more like the oldest one, where I'm pretty introverted and I've learned how to communicate and be out because I'm competitive and I want to win. And in order to run a business, I've got to be able to do these things.
Right.
And so it's like, how do I parent all these different things when the world has changed what they see and what they believe about themselves and what they believe they're supposed to be and what they believe is true and real. And I don't know. Right.
Yeah.
Social media has changed the way we communicate.
Yeah.
I think social media at a lot of levels is insanely detrimental to who we are because, you know, there's this constant, you know, at the dinner table, going out to eat at breakfast or whatever, and everybody's looking at their phone and navigating what's going on their phone, and they're not being present with who they're present with. Mm-hmm. And I think that's significant. And so, you know, I'm hopeful that we're encouraging them to have relationships the right way. But certainly the world is very different than when I grew up, and I didn't have a cell phone until I was, you know, almost out of high school because it wasn't a thing. Social media didn't exist until well into me being an adult. So we didn't have the chance to have some of the same level of distraction. So we had to interact with people more, but, and my 15-year-old's not heavily into social media. Like, he's not spending a ton of time doing that. He'll play video games a lot. And he'll hang out with his friends, and that's great. The daughter, the 12-year-old, she's going to, like, she could, if I allowed her, she would dance and then watch YouTube or, you know, do something all day long. That's all she'd do. And then the little guy is, you know, little games on the iPad, you know, they get bored in the car.
It's Angry Bird action.
Yeah, all that stuff. So like, society is definitely different.
Right.
And it's definitely changed what we do and the level of communication and some level, how we communicate. But there, at the same time, there's good things, right? Like, some of this is going to be on social media.
Yeah.
And so people are going to get to hear your story and see part of your, you know, check on your mate stuff. And there'll be little snippets of things that come out of that where people go, oh man, that's great. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, there's Emmanuel Acho is an old football player. Mm-hmm. And so he said something the other day, and I sent it to one of our mindset guys. Deontay is one of the mindset guys at ATF. And I said, hey man, this would be great. And it was, the statement that he was making was, you know, he's like, I heard this and I think this is very important, is don't win an argument and lose a person. And the purpose behind all that is don't be so right that you arguing with someone to the point of being right, that you lose the relationship with someone and create another set of problems. And I think we've gotten to the point where we do that now.
Yeah.
Like, and it's out of control.
Yeah.
And so like, I took that and I was like, man, that's significant. And so this will provide that same level of thing to others, is there's going to be little snippets of things, little nuggets that capture somebody and in an environment where they get a chance just to hear this one thing. And maybe they're in that dark space and they hear somebody say something that they can relate to because of what you're doing, and it saves somebody's life.
Yeah.
And that's something you just be really proud of what you're trying to accomplish.
Oh, here. Thank you.
And so that'll happen. And truthfully, you may never know about it.
True. No, that means
never hear the story.
Yeah.
Some of them you might, but you might not. And just be okay with that.
Oh, absolutely.
So yeah, social media sucks at some level.
Yeah.
It's changed the way we act. There's some crappy stuff out there. There's also beautiful stuff that's going to be able to help somebody. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, the answer to the question is, I don't know. But be excited about what you're doing.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah, just helping one person, that's all that matters. And it sounds like you're equipping your son with great tools. I mean, what he's doing is really admirable. Like,
I hope, wanting to serve. It's funny because when you're in that spot, you look at it and you go, God, I don't do this well. Right. Like, cause the reality for me is I want to teach him how to control his emotions, but sometimes he pisses me off so bad that I'm ready to choke the life out of the kid. Right. And most of that's around his sister. Like, but there's just a lot of things that you can teach others and teach individuals and encourage them. And I try to communicate to him the importance of controlling those emotions, being passionate as a hockey player, right? Like, he got put in a penalty box last night because he hit this kid. And I mean, he just rocked this kid. And it wasn't an emotional response, but he has a tendency to have those emotional reactions at times. And it's hard in an environment like that where it's competitive, right?
Yeah.
And there's this competing with another person that clearly you don't like at the time that you're competing against them. And there's this physical contact that creates this collision. to be able to control the emotion. Like, cause after he hits this kid, right, this kid goes down. And the hit was relatively clean. It was called because it was a really violent hit. Mm-hmm. But this kid was mad, and this other kid was mad on that team, and cross checks him in the back of the head after he turned away from him. And so, like, I'm proud of the fact that, like, he didn't immediately retaliate again and start wailing and punching, because he's done that in the past. So maybe we're getting some wins along the way. Maybe we're not. The way I'm wired, I never look at anything that I do and go, man, I'm doing that well. Right. I always go, God, man, I really suck at that. And truthfully, I feel like I'm like, even if you looked at, I don't know if it's my Facebook or Instagram or whatever, but if you look at my thing, it's like, husband, Christian, father, suck at all of them, but doing my best. Right. And that's kind of the way I feel. A lot of people outside, and I'm aware of people outside go, no, you're doing a good job.
No, you're right. Doing great.
But it, like me personally, I'm like, oh God, there's so many things I could do better. Like, I could ask them for forgiveness more, because I get pissed off at the way they do something. And I'm like, look, dude, stop. Right. And it's like, why do you keep doing this? Is the 100th time you've done this. Why am I still having to say this to you? Oh, right. But it's fun. I'm glad I'm doing it. I'm glad I'm trying to raise them and getting to see what happens. And, you know, God willing, there's something spectacular that comes out of all of it. And we'll get to all enjoy it together and be like, hey, that was great. Look at that. Right?
Yeah, no, so. Absolutely. No, that's like, sounds like you're really just equipping with them amazing tools. And I'm sure you see yourself in them, which is fun too.
That's the hard part.
Ooh. But
call my dad and be like, sorry, man. Sorry about that.
But it is interesting to hear from a guy, because I know women struggle with what you're describing is called imposter syndrome, where it's like, okay, I could be doing so much better at this. So it's interesting to hear that men go through that too. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure other men suffer from that in silence too, where it's like, you feel you can be doing a way better job when you're already killing it. You're crushing it. Like, your son loves you. You're a great dad and you're running a successful business, but there's always the back of your mind, the imposter syndrome, which, it is interesting to hear guys have that too.
Yeah.
You know,
for sure they do.
So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Wow. But, how has your worldview changed since having kids, like becoming a dad?
Oh gosh. The things that you see, like, you know, as a kid, you can watch movies and see these movies and they really don't have impact on you whatsoever in terms of, you know, a sex scene's about to come up and then you have kids and you're like, oh my gosh, right? Like, you can't watch Top Gun. Oh my gosh, the stuff that's in Top Gun. Oh, we can't do that. Right. And so it's like, wait a minute. And so, like, it's changed significantly because you realize that now you're trying to not only develop and mature yourself, but you're trying to, I'm not trying to raise a kid. I'm trying to raise an adult and I'm trying to raise a good adult. Right. And so, like, we make a lot of decisions around, like, for instance, my oldest hockey player, we've intentionally made decisions about where he's playing hockey instead of one organization. I'm not interested in him being there because those are not good people. And I want him to be around good men that are good coaches. Hockey is great, right? But the reality is, he's even around a lot of former pro athletes, right? But the reality is, so few people actually make that. I'm not concerned about your hockey career. Hockey's great. I love it. Yeah. I love watching you play. That's great. It's amazing. You do a great job. But I'm not concerned about that. I'm concerned about you being a good man, good character, being honorable, treating women with respect, loving others well, and not, oh man, were you on the top hockey team in the market? Were you like ranked number 5 in the country as an athlete? Like, no, that's not important. And so it's trying to understand the importance of what's truly important and raise good humans. My 8-year-old, like, he went, like, he had played what's called rec baseball, right? It was just like out there playing around doing some things. And he wanted to be doing more of it. So we know we need to get him some place where he could have more repetitions because that's what's important. And so we went to a couple places to have him try out and watch this. He went and tried out this one place and the coach just was engaging and encouraging and like looked at him and talked to him and showed them how to play the game and was not like he'd had a previous coach in rec baseball that has no significance, like just yelling at him. Yeah. And I'm like, so we're intentionally looking for putting them around people that are good humans, right? Yeah. Like having my son come volunteer at Adaptive Training Foundation, because one, you get to be around David and mm-hmm. Nick and Deontay and Colin and even Laura and Taylor and these other guys yeah. that are part of ATF that are good human character, great athletes, great individuals. Volunteer with them, see what they're doing, see how they act, help, be present, be in mm-hmm. the room is important.
Yeah.
And so they get a chance to see what it's like to do good things. At the same time, knowing Nick's not perfect. David's not perfect. Mm-hmm. None of these guys are perfect people. They're fallible, just mm-hmm. like you are. You're not going to see as much of their shitheadedness as you have of yourself because they've learned how to control that. But I can assure you, they were just like that. Mm-hmm. And so it's trying to put them around good people, raise good humans, be around people of good character. And hopefully it leads to something spectacular, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's just a great definition of success, you know, just having a happy, healthy human that you raise.
Yeah. It's important. Yeah. Like as a parent, when you get to that point and you have a child, mm-hmm. you go, like, you want good things for them. Like, you want them to be successful. You want good things for them. You want them right. to have the faith that you carry, because if you believe that, again, if you believe yeah. that's important, you want them to carry that. You want to teach them those things because it's important that they move on in life. And it's not just about the right now. It's about the future. And it's about, what are they going to raise? How are they going to raise their kids? What's going to happen there? And so that's what we're looking for.
No, absolutely. I think that's very well said. And again, that's great that you have that outlet with your faith. That's been a rock through it all. So it's important for men to find that outlet, whether that's their personal faith or whether that's volunteering, but just really just having that mechanism. And I did want to ask you too, what brings you the most peace? Like, when do you feel most in flow?
The most. So there's a couple of things. Like, I'm going to talk about a couple of things.
Yeah,
absolutely. So for me, like church type things, mm-hmm. like it doesn't have to be in a church, but like worship is good.
Yeah.
Like listening to somebody teach and preach about what's going on and listening to that, like, provides some level of peace, right? Like, cause mm-hmm. there's a connection there.
Absolutely.
At the same time, I get a lot of peace. So I'm like high throttle wired, right? Like go, 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 all this stuff. And schedule's always so tight and all of that, that I don't like, there's guys that like to go fish. Right. And I for the life of me, I can't figure that out. Like, I cannot sit there and just be patient. And like, if you've watched, like when you watch back on this video, you're going to notice that I'm fidgeting around a lot just because I'm not not comfortable being here with you, but it's just, I'm not comfortable being still. I need to be moving. Go. And so for me, like, skiing, snow skiing, mm-hmm. mountain biking, something that could potentially kill me if I'm not paying attention to that, mm-hmm. allows me to turn my brain off from the other things that are going on in my brain. Because mm-hmm. if I'm flying through a mountain bike trail and I'm not paying attention, if I'm letting the other stuff work in my brain, then I can't turn that off. I can't rest. So literally flying down a trail where I'm going to T-bone that tree if I'm not paying attention to it allows me some peace because yeah. it gives me a chance to rest. Which is weird to a lot of people, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing. Like, I mean, if I don't know what David said in regard to that, but there's going to be some things yeah. like hitting a trail and going to just suffer a little bit mm-hmm. gives you some peace. And so for me, it's, you know, anything that's high adrenaline that mm-hmm. allows me, that forces me to turn my brain off, not allows me. Like, I don't really enjoy golf. I'm good playing golf for about 9 holes before I'm like checking my phone. There's yeah. all these things, like, I need to be doing next? All, you know, like I should be doing mm-hmm. this. I should be productive. That sort of thing. So yeah, peace comes from like activity, mm-hmm. worship, yeah. and then just times like when I can sit on the couch and lay my head in my wife's lap. And that's like, just like, there's a peace about that presence and mm-hmm. that comfort or that embrace, right? That it's just really like, I love hugs. Hugs are great, right?
Mm-hmm. It's comforting. Oh, that's amazing. It sounds like you've had like good coping mechanisms in place since a young age and just kind of knew what worked for you.
It's weird because I never thought about that.
Yeah.
Right. It was never like, I don't remember being taught any of this right? and how to yeah. deal with it, but it just kind of is there.
Yeah.
Grace of God, maybe. Right. That just, I know how to get through it. It's awesome.
No, absolutely. That's awesome. Cause some people are blessed with that ability, you know, and then some need more guidance, which is nothing to be ashamed of, yeah. but it's just a matter of figuring out what works, whether that's something intrinsically, you figure out on your own, or sometimes trauma can affect that and make it sure. harder for some. So it's just a matter of, you know, figuring out what works for you, being vulnerable, having a great support system. And that sounds awesome that you've
thank you.
Really gotten through a lot. But what is your hope for future generations? Amen. I know you've talked a little bit about your hope for your son, and you're equipping him with amazing tools, but just for men in the future, like 100 years from now, like what's your hope for them in terms of mental health?
Yeah. So I think like that could be a long explanation, but the reality is we're only here for a little bit.
Yeah.
And we put a lot of weight on us for mm-hmm. this very finite time that we have here. Even if it's 100 years, right? You're here for 100 years. That's not as much time as you think it is. Mm-hmm. And so we have this pressure on us that's like, right. you have to be perfect, and you have to be all these things, and you have to do all this stuff. And we need to figure out a way. My hope is that we figure out a way to dial that back. Mm-hmm. Now, still be responsible and be accountable. Because I think there's this level right now in society that's like, well, don't be a man anymore. Be right. way feminine, be whatever. And like, that's not what I want. I'm not mm-hmm. saying do that, but I'm saying be a man, be intentional, have some skills you can do with your hands. Mm-hmm. Be prepared to be a warrior if that's required of you. Be able and capable of being violent. Not that you need to do that all the time, right? You need to be in a place where you know how to control that, but dial back the need to be everything to everyone.
Right.
Because we've gone too far with that. Yeah. And the reality is, truthfully, like for all of us, right? For you and I, mm-hmm. nobody's going to remember us in 100 years.
Right.
We'll be sure. dead. We'll be gone. And there's going to be very little evidence that we existed for the most part.
Yeah.
In 100 years from now, I'm going to be 149 years old, right? 148 years old. My kids will be dead. Their kids potentially might be alive and maybe could remember me. But they will have kids at that point, mm-hmm. and those kids are not having any idea who I was. And it just happens so fast, right?
Right.
And so if that's true, let's not stress so much about having to be perfect and be all things mm-hmm. to all people, because let's realize that life is good right yeah. now. Have conversations and not put that weight on you that requires you to be so perfect to everyone.
I love that. Oh, that's really well said. And I'm sure a lot of people needed to hear that too.
Well, hopefully there's some things that they can grasp, right? Yeah. Again, like I'm excited about what you're doing, and like God willing, somebody gets something and they, you know, they make a connection. And from that perspective, like I'm available if somebody needs to reach out, like,
yeah,
my I'm here. Right. Open. Yeah. So like connect and let's talk and let's help.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Clint. I really appreciate it.
It's been a lot of fun.
And yeah, I'm glad you had me. This has been very invaluable. Thank you.
Yeah.